Hey, everybody, this is Pierre Quinn, and you're listening to the Leading Wild Green podcast, where my mission is to help you live, to learn, to lead with confidence. And I'm recording this podcast episode from the backseat of my car. On this episode, I'll tell you why I'm here. I'll give you an update on my swimming lessons. I'll share with you what I learned during a traffic accident. We'll wrestle with being evaluated, give you a lesson on what I learned watching a show on the National Geographic Channel, and talk about dealing with unrealistic expectations. So listen up. So I'm here in the back seat of my car because I'm on vacation. We're in Massanutten. If you've ever heard of the Massanutten Resort in Virginia, it's a pretty cool place. I think the appeal to this place is the skiing, but it bills itself as a four-season resort. Not a Four Seasons resort with an S, but a four-season resort, meaning a resort for all times of the year. So we're here. We were gifted a vacation to get away for a couple of days, and you really need it. But I didn't record a podcast episode before I left. So I'm trying to figure out, where can I record this thing? And you might hear some noise in the background. You may hear some cars passing by or some people talking, because the two options that I had for recording the podcast today were either the laundry room in the condo complex that we were staying, or the backseat of the car. Well, I think I had a third option. I could do it outside, but the ambient noise would be much greater. So we're in the backseat of the car, and it's not working out too badly. So yeah, vacation. What do you do to get away? And hopefully you're taking some time to get away, to unplug. Living and learning and leadership are really hinged on how well you take care of yourself. And if you just go all the time and you don't dial back and take a break, you're going to burn out fast. You're going to burn out real fast. And I know some of you say, well, I can just power through, and I have great resolve and I have great determination. And this is true for some of you. But then you have to ask yourself, what is suffering? Is it your health? Is it your relationships? Is it your mental health? Is it your peace of mind? Something is suffering because of your desire, even though you have this ability, because of your desire to power through and not take the breaks that you know you need to take. So yeah, we're at this resort, Massanutten. You can Google it. You can look it up. It's a pretty cool place, close to the mountains, this whole Appalachian thing going on. And we can see the mountains from where we're staying. And it's really cool just to unplug and to get away, to see the mist on the mountains, to not hear the noise and traffic of city life, and just to breathe deeply some fresh air, some clean air, some mountain air, and unplug for a few days. So we're here for the rest of the week, and we're looking forward to just continue to unwind and spend time, the four of us, in our family. So hopefully you're unplugging. And what do you do to unplug? What do you do to relax? What do you do to get away? Even if it's a staycation where you can't get too far away, how do you shut down and find some time to relax and to unplug? So today we're going swimming. That's what we're going to do. Our thing on our agenda to do with the family today in vacation. And I really have to swim today because normally this would be the day that I go swimming. I'm recording this podcast on a Wednesday morning. Normally I would go swimming today. This would be my swim lesson today. But I told my coach, and I know you guys hear me talk about my coach. And listen, if you're in the Maryland area, if you're in the Virginia area, really more DC, Virginia, instead of Maryland on a whole, and I know for me it's about 45 minutes, but if you're in the DC and Virginia area and you need swim lessons, check out this website, weaquatics.com, weaquatics.com, and I'll put it in the show notes so you can click on it, and you can click on the About Us, and you can see my swim coach, Brad is his name. great guy, great program, great business. Their expertise is in infant swim response, really teaching infants, teaching toddlers how to survive in the water. And it's amazing to walk in and see these babies in the water, not just surviving, but thriving. So check out weaquatics.com. Check them out on Facebook under the same thing, WE Aquatics. Drop them a note. If you need swim lessons, send a note. Say, Brad, I heard that you were a great swim coach and I live in the area, or I'll be passing through the DC, Virginia area, and maybe I can stop by for a lesson or bring my kids. So be it. Check out Coach Brad and WE Aquatics. So my previous swim lesson, I think it went okay. I think we're up to four now. We're up to four. Today would have been five, but I'm going to swim today in the pool at the resort. So maybe if I record it and send it to my coach, I can get some credit for it. I'm not sure. But I think we're up to five lessons. And what Coach Brad said to me this time, just, man, it was so much gold. It was so much truth in what he was saying to me. In moments, it felt like he was preaching to me. I'm going to be honest. But I sit there and I took it, and we had a great conversation. And he says to me, we were in the pool, and he says, you know, your success as a swimmer is just on the other side of your comfort zone. And it just kind of floored me in the pool. He said, your success as a swimmer is just on the other side of your comfort zone, because I'm in the pool and my biggest challenge is I'm trying to control what I can't control. I can't control the water. Now I can control my body in the pool when I learn how to balance and how to carry myself. I can control that. I can control myself, but I can't control the water. And I'm trying to control the water. And when the water begins to do something that I don't like based on my movements, I panic a little bit. I kind of reach out. I get scared. I tense up. And my coach is always trying to push me. I'm a beginner swimmer, and I embrace where I am on this journey. I'm swimming while green, as it were. I'm a newbie. And the coach said, listen, your success as a swimmer is on the other side of your comfort zone. So I'm going to have to keep pushing you in order for you to get better. And I thought about that hours after the lesson and hours after our conversation. And I asked the question, how many times in life am I keeping myself from getting better because I get right up close to my comfort zone and I walk away? I get right up close to my comfort zone and I back down, get right up close to my comfort zone and I give up. What if that was the case for all of us? That true success and effectiveness, no matter what it is, no matter what area it is, you can put anything on the table that you're trying to do. What if true effectiveness and success is just on the other side of your comfort zone? And what it would life look like if you embraced that in order for you to get better, it's going to require you to be more uncomfortable and learn to be okay with the things that you can't control, but then embrace and work on the things that you can control. So yeah, Coach Brad messed me up. Other side of my comfort zone, new skills, new feelings, got to get used to new environments. And that's the only way that I'm going to learn how to swim. So I'm reading this book. Well, I just finished reading this book called Boundaries by Dr. Henry Cloud and by Dr. John Townsend. And it's a clip up. I gave a talk at a conference and I used part of the book in one of my talks. And the doctors in this book, really the premise of the book is how to say no and take control of your life. For a lot of us, this idea of saying no and establishing a personal boundary, a professional boundary, a spiritual boundary, a financial boundary, wherever we need boundaries, is foreign to us and it's outside of our comfort zone, because we have been taught that to show love and to show respect means allowing everybody to do what they want to do. And some of us as little kids, the idea of boundaries were destroyed or violated or weren't taught properly. So we go through life as boundary-less individuals. And when you try to put in boundaries, then your discomfort increases. Maybe a good example of this is a young person. Let's say a girl who, as a little girl, take an environment like maybe church, and she was always taught to give hugs to everybody at church. Now, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, there's some discomfort, there's some apprehension. Many times younger people are better gauges of personality and character than people who are older. They can just feel a vibe that something's not right with an individual. But if we consistently tell a person to fight that feeling and give out hugs, regardless of their comfort level, what we're essentially training them is that whatever they have for a boundary can be violated based on somebody else's directive. So even if you don't feel comfortable, even if you don't agree, even if it's not in your best interest, go ahead and give a person a hug. And they're taught as they get older, just give people what they want, regardless of how it makes you feel. So what can you see what can happen when this young lady gets to high school, gets to college, maybe becomes a professional and starts dating? That same notion comes back to bear. Doesn't matter if you're uncomfortable. Doesn't matter if it's not good for you. Doesn't matter if it just doesn't feel right. Just give in to people's demands. Now, she wasn't taught that at 30. She was taught that at 5 when we were forcing her to give hugs to everybody at church. You got to rock with your kids sometimes. And if they're not into it, especially with proximity and distance, with touch, with hugs, with kisses, you got to rock with your kids. And if they're not feeling it, respect the boundaries of your kid and their willingness to not show affection in a way that some of us have been programmed to show affection, even when it makes us uncomfortable. So just little things, and ask yourself where are the areas where in life where I'm struggling because I'm close to my comfort level because of something that happened when I was younger that violated a sense of boundary or a sense of control. And the same principle applies in order for you to get better. Now let's kind of clear this up, because we talk about comfort level. Now we're talking about comfort level, and it can be applied in two different areas. Now, when we're talking about hugs or intimacy and the comfort level there, it's a different conversation between the comfort level with something that's difficult. I hope you can see that and understand really how I'm trying to shape this conversation. Being uncomfortable because there's somebody in the room that wants to get close to you and hug you and kiss you is different from feeling uncomfortable because something is too hard. And I'm not saying that, you on the other side of your comfort zone, you should give everybody a hug and a kiss that wants it. No, not at all. Especially what's going on in the world today, and just really this attack and violation and manipulation of tons of young people and even adults too. We got to be careful how we are in interpersonal situations in proximity with other people. But when I say on the other side of your comfort zone, I'm talking about often giving up because things are too difficult, because you've been taught to give up when things get too hard for you or too complicated, or you don't know how to do it right off the bat. You walk away, and that's what I'm talking about. So I'm driving home from church. It was on a Wednesday, and there was an accident. And it was bad. Now this road that I'm on driving home, 4 lanes, and you get to the light, and everybody at the light is trying to merge into one lane. You see all the emergency personnel there. And I'm sitting at this light because only 2 or 3 cars are moving through the light at the same time, only moving through the light as it changes. Only a couple can get through at a time. I'm sitting there for about 10 minutes, just kind of frustrated, trying to figure out how long it's going to take me to get home. And I hear the sound of a car horn. And I look around, and it's one of the guys from church. One of our leaders actually at church, one of our deacons, head deacon, and he's on his horn and he's motioning. he sticks his hand out of his window. He's motioning, and his motion is for me to follow him. Now, I know the way that I'm supposed to go home. I've taken this way home for over a year, really familiar with it. And he said, he motions to me to follow him. And I have about 5 seconds to make a decision. So I look to make sure there's nothing coming, and I follow him. And in my head, I'm trying to figure out, where are we going? Now, we have to go travel in the same direction to get home. So I know he's trying to get home as well. But I'm uncomfortable because I don't know the way. I don't know this way. And I stopped to record that in a voice note on my way home, that sometimes leadership means learning to get behind people who already know the way and letting them lead in that area. There's an accident. Maybe there are alternative ways home, but the alternative ways don't come up on the GPS. But this guy, one of the leaders in our church, is quite intimate with the roads and the back roads and multiple ways of getting to the same location. And I had to allow myself to trust his expertise in this area of the journey and be okay with him leading me. And it's cool, or it's understandable when you're on the road and you're trying to get somewhere. But when you're inside of an organization, when you're inside of a meeting, when you're working on a problem, when you're wrestling with the culture of your group, it's not always easy to say, okay, this person has more expertise than I do. Let's let them weigh in, or even let's let them lead in this area. And that's if you're a confident leader, it doesn't take anything away from you. It would also help to empower them and encourage them. So where in your organization, where in your church, where on your job, where in your group, maybe you're listening to this and you're working on a group project, you know, the stuff that we all hate in college, working on group projects. Where in the group, because usually a know-it-all rises up, and then there's some individuals in the group who are competent, but because there's a know-it-all, they just kind of check out. There's some people who are not intent on doing the work at all, just kind of skating by. And there's some people who have good ideas or experience, but they're not as confident, so they kind of slink back. Where are you on that spectrum? And how can you, if you know someone has some ability, has some experience, how can you let them lead in the area that they have the experience and not take anything away from you? And it's tough letting other people take the driver's seat or facilitate the discussion or lead out. But that's what great leaders do. Great leaders also understand the power of evaluation. Now, last week, I received by email 2 evaluations, and both of these were from events that I had spoken at. At one event, I did a breakout session. At the other event, I did a breakout session and a plenary session or keynote presentation. And I got the reviews back, got the evaluation back. And out of 5 points, my overall evaluation, I think one was 4.5 and the other was 4.6. And I was just reading through the comments, and the comments were really good for the most part. But then there were a couple of comments on each evaluation that just kind of stung, kind of punched me in the gut. 95-96% of the people saying it was a great presentation, really made me think, really encouraging, you know, love to see him back as a speaker next year. So much to gain from this. This was great. One of the best presentations that I've heard. But then you sprinkled in, you get some comments. One said, I don't know what he was talking about. One said, this wasn't encouraging at all. It made me feel guilty. One said, you know, maybe it would have been better for a different environment. And out of all those positive affirmations, the ones that stuck me were the ones that didn't seem so positive. Well, here's the thing about evaluation. The purpose of evaluation is for you to get better. The purpose of evaluation is for you to get better. This is what I taught my students when I taught communication courses, and business communication, interpersonal communication, beginning, well, speech classes, the power of evaluation. And I'm sitting there and I said, okay, I can get bitter. You may have heard this before. You can get bitter or you can get better. You can get bitter or you can get better. Look at the evaluation and where are they telling the truth? Where are they making sense? Because the truth is, you're not as good as your best review. You're not that good. Neither are you as bad as your worst review. So the people who are giving you 5 stars and saying you are amazing and the best thing in the world, okay, you're not that good. It could have been the euphoria of the moment. You could have hit it out of the park, but you're not that superly amazing. And then the individuals who didn't like it at all and said it was terrible, you're not that bad. You live somewhere between your best review and your worst review. But for your reviews, how can you take them and learn from them? And then when you're evaluating other people, how can you put yourself back into the shoes of someone who's being evaluated? And you know how that feels and you know what that looks like. How can you use that when you're evaluating someone else? So you want to keep that in mind. The purpose of evaluation is to help you grow. The purpose of evaluation is to help you to move forward. And how are you using the evaluation tools to help your team move forward? But also, how are you learning when you need to be evaluated? So I'm watching National Geographic, and one of the shows on National Geographic is Wicked Tuna, Outer Banks. Now I'm not a fisherman. I don't watch a lot of fishing shows. I don't go fishing. I've gone fishing a couple of times in my life, but it's kind of not my thing. It's not really my thing. But we were watching it. We're on vacation. We're trying to take it all in. We're watching National Geographic, and it was kind of an interesting show. And you know, these reality television shows, they have a way of setting this stuff up. So it draws you in. The scripted lines, the cuts right before a piece of drama happens. Probably 80% of it is the music that helps you feel a certain way. You know, all of these things come into bear. But we're watching a show about these fishermen, and they're trying to catch tuna because catching a tuna fish apparently yields a lot of money. You know, they were catching a tuna and bringing in $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 for just one fish. So it was interesting show. But how the show was set up, they had 4 or 5 boats in the water that they were watching, the captains and the crew of these boats. And there was one guy who was sitting in the dock, and he was calling the other ship captains, asking them how the water was, asking them how the fish were biting, asking them what was going on, asking them how everybody else was doing. And I remember one particular conversation. A guy says, one of the captains says to this guy, to this one captain who's still in the dock with his boat and his crew watching TV, he says to him, "You're not going to catch any fish sitting in the dock." And he hangs up the phone. And he says, "In the fishing world, we call these people pelicans. We call them pelicans. If you've ever seen a pelican, pelicans just kind of wait for you to throw the crumbs at them." He says he's being a pelican because we're out here and we're doing all the work, and he just wants to feed on our crumbs. He wants to know where the tuna are biting. He wants to know the best place to put his boat. He wants to know wind conditions. He wants to know all of that. He wants us all to do all the work and throw him the crumbs. And I'm not helping any pelicans." And I sat there and I thought about that. How in life do we sometimes ask people to do the same thing for us? We ask them to do all the work, to do all the legwork, to do everything. We want to start a project, but we want them to do everything for us. Come up with the idea. We want them to recruit. We want them to come up with the plan. We want them to do the scheduling. And we just want to take over at the last minute. Or we don't start something because everybody won't do everything for us. And we're trying to feed off the crumbs of other people. We're acting like pelicans. And really, it's about getting there and getting your feet wet, getting your hands dirty, trying, figuring out what we're good at, delegating what you're not good at, building a team. But you don't build a life. You don't build impact just by sitting. You don't build impact just by researching. You don't build impact just by studying. You don't build impact just by listening to podcasts or webinars or going to learning events like the Revision Conference on October 29th, revision2017.eventbrite.com. Had to throw that in there. You don't just build by just taking in and learning. You build by applying. You build by getting out there. You build by trying and failing. You don't build by being just a pelican. And you can survive. You can't thrive. You can survive off the crumbs of other people, but you can't thrive off the crumbs of other people. And take a few moments and ask yourself, where am I trying to survive? Where am I trying to thrive off somebody else's work? Where am I trying to thrive off someone else's impact and effort and success? Where am I trying to thrive by not putting any hard work for myself? Well, we do it all the time. You could pick any category of living, any category of learning, any category of leading. There's a temptation to survive off someone else's work and off someone else's efforts. So hopefully you'll take some inventory of your life this week and point out where you're trying to survive off someone else's crumbs when you got to get in there and work hard for yourself. So I was listening to the radio and I heard this commercial before, I think some years before, but this time I heard it and it just kind of just stuck me. And I said, that's just so unrealistic. It was a service to allow you to name a star for somebody else. Now go outside on a clear night or even just Google. Some of these Google images are pretty cool, but clear night is much better, I think, than Google images. Now, Google images are cool, but it's on the screen. Clear sky at night. Check out the stars. Now, how would they be able to, if you said, I'm going to pick this star and I'm going to name this star, how would they be able to keep track of which star is yours? Like, out of all the stuff we have to spend money for, out of all the inventions, out of all this space travel stuff, out of all this keeping track of the cosmos, I find it hard to believe that they're going to use hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to keep track of one star that you have named so you can give it to somebody else. And here's the thing. You don't own it, so you can't give a star to somebody else. But they said, if you name the star, we'll track it for you. It'll be on a record, the Library of Congress or Office of something, something that sound really important. And you'll be able to name this star and you can gift to somebody that you named a star for them. And so that's an unrealistic expectation. You're putting out an unrealistic expectation. You're not really tracking stars. Named stars for people. Let's be serious. And sometimes we are guilty of putting out unrealistic expectations, stuff that you cannot deliver on. Listen, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And if you can't make the commitment, if you're unwilling to make the adjustment, if you don't think that you have it, don't put it out there and say that you have, because you'll put other people in uncomfortable situations. That's something that we're going to talk about at the Revision Conference, October 29th, Baltimore, Maryland. We want to see you in the building, University of Baltimore, Maryland, the Revision Conference. Check it out. Revision2017.eventbrite.com. You got to get there for this conference. It was amazing at Bowie State University. People were asking when we were going to do it again. I need you to, no matter what discipline, no matter what area of life, no matter what your career is, we're going to talk about living, learning, and leading. But most importantly, we're going to talk about the principles for major life change and how to make that major life change. So check that out, revision2017.eventbrite.com. We want to see you in the building for the Revision Conference. We got the early bird discount going on right now. And if you got a large group, some of you got 10 or 15 people, whole office, whole church leadership team that you're thinking about bringing, send me an email, pierre@prccoin.com, and we'll have some of our staff talk to you about possible discounts for your whole team that comes to the Remission Conference. Hey guys, that's all I got for this podcast from the back seat of my car at the Massanutten Resort in Virginia. But until next week, God bless, and make sure you keep striving to live, learn, and lead with confidence. Take care.